10, 9, 8, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks and Elliott. Coaches Week continues here on the pod. We heard from Travis Green earlier on this week. Today, Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
My favorite part of all this is when I asked him if he was nervous about talking to Sidney Crosby for the first time, and he like laughed at me.
What does that tell you?
Pretty confident guy.
You know, it's interesting too. He's talked about this before, the idea that when he got the call to work for the Pittsburgh Penguins as the head coach of the big squad coming up from Wilkes-Barre, the American Hockey League, he thought to himself, this might be my last chance as a head coach in the NHL. Safe to say, it's been a success.
Well, it's only his last chance if he wants it to be his last chance.
That's a great point. Here's Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins on 31 Thoughts of the Podcast.
Seconds to go in regulation. Penguins pick off a pass in the leaf zone, but they can't keep it. Finally, it's free, and it will go to Schultz. He can't pull the trigger. Leafs spin it back towards the Penguins end. We've got 10 seconds left here in this period. Penguins leading 5-2. And they have the puck in their own zone, about to move into first place in the Metropolitan Division. Penguins have won it over the Toronto Maple Leafs. And your final score, the Penguins 5 and the Maple Leafs 2. We'll be back with a recap of the third period in just a moment. Start the post-game show on the Penguins Hockey Network.
Mike Sullivan is the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. He joins us on 31 Thoughts, the podcast, courtesy of the Coaches Association. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Mike, thanks for joining us. We're sitting here in Toronto. A day after you and the Pittsburgh Penguins lit this city on fire, it seemed as if it was, and I know you want to be humble about it, puck on a string at times for the Pittsburgh Penguins on Tuesday night. At times as a coach, do you just find yourself sitting back and just becoming a fan and watching what this explosive Penguins team can do?
Well, I think you're being kind to our Penguins team. You know, it was... I think our power play was really good last night, and that really helped us with the end result of the game. Certainly Toronto had their moments where they had a lot of zone time and a fair amount of scoring chances as well. When we look at our overall team game, we know we can be better defensively. We know we can be tighter and harder to play against in certain aspects. So, you know, I think we're trying to have an honest assessment of where our team is at. It's the only way we can improve. Having said that, there are moments when we sit behind the bench and we watch our power play or we watch some of our star players when they're at their very best, and we often marvel sometimes at what they're able to accomplish out there with the puck. They're impressive, and they're just elite players in their own right. They're a privilege to coach. It's fun to be around these guys day in and day out and watch them practice and watch them go about their business every day on how they try to hone their craft to be the best. And I don't know that there's a better example in the game than Crosby with his just an insatiable appetite to be the best player in the game. You know, it's not by accident. He's a very gifted player, and he's elite in his own right in that regard. But the work ethic that he has and the time that he puts in on a daily basis to be the best is impressive.
I wonder, when you have guys like that, how much of it is this is what we need you to do and how I'm going to ask you how to play, and how much is it, okay, you're on your own here. You can do what you feel you have to do.
Well, we're a coaching staff that believes in not taking the stick out of our players' hands. You know, when you look at the group of players that we have, and we sat as a coaching staff when I became the coach of this team and try to implement a game plan that could play to the strengths of our core. And that was the very first question I asked our coaching staff when we talked about how we were going to play. And When you look at the core guys that we have, we believe that one of their greatest strengths is their speed game. And not just their foot speed, but how quickly they think the game and their anticipation skills and, you know, and their puck skills, their ability to move the puck and change the point of attack and create. And so we wanted to try to implement a game plan that could leverage those strengths. And so there's always that fine line, I think, as a coach, where you want to implement a certain amount of structure. With our group, and we've certainly done that, but we're careful not to implement too much structure because we don't want to get in the way of some of that creativity. So we allow for that. We encourage that. We certainly need to play within structure. And the phrase I always use with our guys is, you know, when you guys have the puck, there are certain things that are non-negotiable. Most isn't. And we're going to allow you the latitude to make plays. We'll stay out of your way. When we don't have the puck, you've got to meet us halfway in that regard, and you've got to play within the structure of the team. And to their credit, they've been great partners in that regard.
I'm curious, Mike, after you took the job, when was the first time you had to sit down Sidney Crosby and say, I don't like this, or you're wrong about this? For lack of a better term, you had to discipline Sidney Crosby.
I don't know that I've ever had that conversation with Sid. I, you know, there have been critiques of his game, and he handles those really well.
Can I ask you, like, what was the first time you ever had to say or critique his game? And, like, were you nervous to do it?
No.
Okay.
No. I just think it's my responsibility. And I tell our guys that. You know, I told them on the first day that I met them that my commitment to them was I was going to be honest with them, good or bad. And I believe it's the only way you can make progress. So, when we play well, we tell them we play well, regardless of what the score is. You know, some games you can play extremely well and you come out on the wrong side of the score. When that happens, with as a coaching staff, we're the first guys to, you know, to compliment our guys and tell them how they play. You know, we try to give them an honest assessment, game in and game out, day in and day out, of how our overall team game is. And I have the same commitment with individuals. And so I just think we try to do it the right way. We try to do it respectfully. But we don't mince words because, if you try to be too politically tactful, the message can get lost, so to speak.
Yes,
right?
I get that.
So and our guys, they handle it extremely well. I just think Sid's a guy that wants to win. He looks for feedback. You know, he likes the feedback. And we offer it to him. We, you know, when it's good, we encourage. You know, we encourage more of his play. When we think we need him to stop on more pucks or cut his skating down or stay closer to the puck or whatever it may be, we try to share those observations with him as well. But we've got a lot of respect for our players. But as I said, my commitment to them that it was I was going to be straight up with them. I'll be honest with you guys, and we'll try to create a partnership here where we can try to problem solve and meet the challenges that this league ultimately presents.
I want to stick with Crosby. And when I found out that you were coming in to visit us and come on the podcast, I went to my bookshelf and pulled out my favorite hockey coaching book. This was published in 1969. Anatoly Tarasov, Road to Olympus. Fascinating book. I don't know if you have a thought on Tarasov specifically, but there's one passage in here that when I read it, and not to be too overly maudlin about Sidney Crosby or this passage, it makes me think about Sidney Crosby. And it goes like this. And this is all sort of, this is the height of the, you know, hockey Cold War between the Soviet Union and Canada. So a lot of it reads like Soviet propaganda at times. But Tarasov, talking about passing, says, the main thing about our passes is that they come from the heart. Our boys are not stingy when it comes to passing. The Soviet pass is a new embodiment of our teamwork. And when I watch Sidney Crosby make plays, and whether it's a Dominic Simone pass in the Minnesota game.
His pass to Crosby off a stick, hopping quickly into the Minnesota end. Dubnyk ramming around on the near side. The Penguins are right there. And again, Crosby takes off, goes behind the net. Donato chases. They left him in the dust. Throw it in front. Quick shot, score. The Penguins have cashed in again. Dominic Simone set up by the brilliant play of 87 Sidney Crosby. And Simone put that into an open net. And you have to have some feelings for Dubnyk. He doesn't know whether to cry or wind his watch right now. The Penguins are buzzing.
Well, we saw a special play by Evgeny Malkin on the Rust goal. Well, Sid says, I'll see your special play, and I'll raise you with even a specialer play. As Ryan Donato chases Sid Bean behind the goal, he banks it off the back of the net. Donato goes out on the turnpike. Sid spins off. He's going 10-2, 2:45, walking his way, crabbing his way out from behind the goal line and spots Simone. And, partner, you could have even had this one here. As Sid puts it on the table and Simone puts it in the empty net, it's 6-2.
Whether it was Tuesday night, the pass to Brian Rust across the crease that no one sees coming, which was a beautiful play.
McCann goes left side over to Chris Letang. They work it down right in front of the net. Rust, he shoots and scores! Brian Rust by Frederick Anderson, and the Penguins take a 1-0 lead. Oh, save my face with a rusty razor. Brian Rust.
Simple, 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 and execute. You had the original shot by Jared McCann, Mikey. Puck retrieval by the Penguins. Back to McCann, right over to Chris Letang. Zips it down to Sidney Crosby along the goal line. What a pass by Sid. Back door, right through the blue paint, onto the tape of Brian Rust. And the thing here, Mikey, it's the release. It didn't have to be that hard. You needed to get it off your stick quick. It hits the glove of Anderson, but because it's so quick, Anderson can't get square to Rust, and he's able to give the Penguins a 1-0 lead.
I say to myself, when I look at Crosby making plays and passing and finding these guys that no one sees out there, it's almost as if he's saying to his teammates, don't worry, I'll find you. Play your game and I'll find you. When you watch Sidney Crosby play, and when you think of those two plays specifically, and you've seen much more, obviously, than we have of Sidney Crosby, when you see some of these passes and these plays, what goes through your mind? To me, it's, don't worry, I'll find you.
Well, he never ceases to amaze us. You know, it becomes the new normal in Pittsburgh because he does it night in and night out for us. And, you know, he's just one of those guys that has elite vision. You know, he's a generational talent. And those guys don't come around that often. And so to have the opportunity to coach him and be around him every day and witness what he does on the ice, you know, it certainly, from my standpoint, it's a privilege to be around him. You know, the one thing I will say is the advice that we give players when we put them with Sid is just play your game, because he has the ability to adapt his game to the guys we put around him. One of the discussions I've had just recently with Jason Zucker when we got him from Minnesota, in the first game or two that he was, we put him right with Sid, as you guys know. Our observation was he was, a lot of times, he's waiting for the puck. And one of the things that I said to our coaching staff that we need to help Zuck with is he doesn't need to wait, because Sid will get him the puck. We're trying to utilize Jason's speed. We think the speed factor that Jason brings is a competitive advantage. So we want him to utilize that. We're trying to get him into that extra gear. And we don't need him to wait, because when he plays with Sid, he doesn't have to. Sid's going to get him the puck. And I think that's what you're alluding to with his passing ability. But it's almost like, and the coaching staff, we kind of chuckle about this a lot. You know, when we talk about Sid and his overall game and just his intellect, we always say that Sid's playing chess when some of the other guys are playing checkers, right? And he's just one of those elite players that anticipates plays 2 and 3 moves in advance. Mm-hmm. And so the guys that play with him, they have to get used to that. You know, they get surprised sometimes by when they get the puck because they don't expect it.
Is that because he plays on his backhand so much? And players I don't know that we've seen anyone, going back to Dave Keon in the 60s and 70s, has seen anyone play on his backhand as much as Sid does.
He does have the ability to play a lot in his backhand, but I just think it's his ability to think the game. And he's creative. He's real creative. He'll do things and he'll use bank passes and how he used the boards or a high flip to a certain area, or he'll use the back of the net to pass to himself. He does, he thinks in such a creative way. I don't know that I've ever been around a player that scored more goals off the back of a goaltender from below the goal line or from a sharp angle. If he sees a window of opportunity where the goalie's not tight to the post, he seizes those moments better than any player that I've ever witnessed. So his ability to think the game the way he does in such a creative fashion, And then he has the skill set to act on it and to execute those type of plays. And really, for me, that's where it stems from. You know, it's his playmaking genius that I think is the impetus of his ability to distribute the puck the way he does.
I want to take you back to last summer. I can imagine that the best thing about being the coach of the Penguins is that while these two guys are here, Jim Rutherford and the organization make it very clear we're in it to win it every season. But the end of last year, it was pretty clear that you guys tried to rattle Malkin's cage a bit. And there were some rumors that he was going to be traded. Did you ever say, hey, is this true? Or did you ever talk to Jim Rutherford about it? I wonder what you as a coach are thinking while all of this is going on.
Well, the first thing I would say is Jim and I really don't concern ourselves with all the speculation and the rumor mill that you guys partake in
I don't
on
know
a
what
daily
you're talking
basis.
About, yes.
So we know the truth and what's on the inside, you know, and so we really don't have a lot of discussions around that because it's really not anything that we can control. What I will say is that we do communicate with Gino, and both Jim and I both communicated with Gino throughout the course of the summer and had a few discussions with Gino and just our, you know, assessment of where we were at and how we were going to try to move forward and improve. And so, you know, those discussions were had with Gino so that he understood what the expectations were going into training camp. But, you know, I give Gino so much credit because he's such a driven guy. And, you know, it wasn't like Gino didn't have a good year last year. He had 80-something points. He was over a point a game. But he's capable of more. You know, most specifically, his two-way game, right? His ability to influence outcomes in the win column for us more consistently. And so Gino and I had that discussion last summer, and he's well aware of it, and he takes ownership and responsibility for his own game. That's what I love about him. And he was bound and determined to prove that he is still the generational talent and the elite player that he has been for a decade plus in this league. And he showed it through his work ethic coming back to training camp. He's had a terrific year for us.
You know what I really like about the two of those guys is that when one of them is out, the other one really seems to like the challenge of making sure the team is okay even without one of them there. They really seem to like it, and I kind of really enjoy watching them when the other one doesn't play.
Yeah, I think they embrace that challenge, and they're so competitive. I think they thrive on it, you know, and it's happened on more than one occasion with both guys. They've shown an ability to elevate their game and take the whole team on their back, so to speak, you know, through their example. And so I just think it's an indication of how competitive both of those guys are.
When you have a team as skilled as yours, and we've seen other teams in the NHL highly skilled, and sometimes they tend to chase an extra pass that they shouldn't have made. They'll chase an easy game because they're so highly skilled. How do you make sure that your Penguins don't do either of those things?
Well, it's a constant discussion. You know, I think when you look at elite players in the game, I think that that's a tendency that's a common denominator. And so, you know, we talk up to our power play all the time about making sure we don't try to pass it in the net. You know, we've got to shoot the puck. And sometimes the simple play like a shot on goal creates more opportunity off the rebound or the spray or whatever it may be. And I don't think, you know, we're just as much inclined to be susceptible to overpassing or trying to get too cute, so to speak, out there. You know, we've had discussions with our group this year about, you know, and maybe this is the silver lining in some of the adversity that we face from an injury standpoint with some of our key guys going down for the length of time that they did. It was easy to convince the group that we needed to trust one another, establish a team game, and that team game is rooted in simplicity. And so we've had success through that process. So as we start to get healthy guys and our key guys back in the lineup, our challenge is can we still bring that same level of simplicity to our overall team game? And so that's a discussion that we have with our guys almost daily. And so I don't think our team is any different than some of the other teams that have quote-unquote star power or elite players. You know, I've said to our guys from day one when I became their coach that in my experience, I've never seen a team score their way to a championship. You know, you have to have the ability to be hard to play against. It's not always about, or as we say, you don't always have to outscore teams. You got to outplay teams. So scoring's part of it, but keeping it out of your net is also a part of it. Or if you have the puck coming through the neutral zone, maybe there isn't an opportunity to create because you don't have numbers or you don't have time and space or it's late in a shift and you don't want to feed an opponent's transition game, which may be very dangerous. And so that discipline is all part of learning how to win. And so that's the challenge, I think, of coaching is to try to convince your group to buy into that discipline of making sure that it's not just about scoring goals. It's about playing the game the right way.
My first year at Hockey Night in Canada was 03-04. The first playoff series I ever did was Boston-Montreal when you were coaching the Bruins. And I'm just wondering, is there something that 2020 Mike Sullivan thinks about looking back at 2004 Mike Sullivan and it makes you laugh about you then and you now?
Oh, I think I'm a very different coach today than I was back then. And obviously when you have, you know, 15, 16 plus more years of experience and everything that I've gone through as a coach, it's just, I've been through so many learning opportunities. And so I just think that's the evolution of a coach. And so
is there anything in particular you remember back and you say, oh boy, I can't believe I did that, or that's one I wish I could have over?
There are, you know, I look back on that experience and I would do some things differently for sure. And I think once again, the benefit of experience just offers me that perspective in how to deal with, you know, certain situations that arise that teams in this league are faced with. And so I look back on that experience a lot and think about, you know, what I liked that we did as a coach and staff, what I might do differently in order maybe to get a different outcome. But once again, I just think that's part of the evolution of coaching.
I wonder about your relationship with officials. And the reason I asked that is Elliot and I talked to Sidney Crosby in Chicago at the NHL Media Tour. And I said to him, or maybe Elliot made the point, I can't recall, if you could go back and do anything over again, what would you change? And Crosby right away said, oh man, I was too hard on officials. Yap, yap, yap. I couldn't stop. You know, I've spent a lot of time apologizing since because I realized, you know what? I was out of line. My bad. I'm going to spend a lot of time apologizing. How are you with officials then? And how are you with officials now?
I think we've all learned through that. It's just the competitive nature of the game. And I think that's what drives all of us. And so, unfortunately, sometimes the officials probably are the... They get
the brunt.
They're in the line of fire, so to speak. And they have a tough job. It's a hard job. And I think we all have so much respect for what they do for our game. And I do think I try not to be as hard on the officials as a coach now that's coached for 15 plus years as I was when I was a young coach. I'm not going to lie to you. I still have my moments. You know, some nights I drive home, you know, in the car and I say, geez, I wish I should have stayed off the refs a little bit. But once again, it's a competitive environment and it's emotional. And when you care, sometimes you can get caught up in it. And so, you know, we all, I think, try to, you know, I talk to my coaches all the time about being a check and a balance against one another. And, you know, there are certain things you can control. We've got to try to pick our spots. I mean, it's part of coaching, I think, sometimes to advocate for your players in certain situations. But at the end of the day, it's we try to let them do their job and we're going to try to do our job. That's the message that we all try to remind ourselves of.
I wanted to ask you about the Coaches Association. You led it for a couple of years. Number one, who are the bigger group of complainers, coaches or players?
Oh, that's probably a tie.
That's a very good politically correct answer. You know, we talked to Rick Bowness a week ago and I asked him about this. There was a time when, as a coach in this league, you basically had no protection. You know, the teams made it very clear that you were at their whim and didn't have a lot of protections. Things have changed a lot. The pension, the work that's being done on medical plans. When you take a look at how far it's come, Did you ever think you'd get to this day where the protections for coaches were going to be better because of the work that's been done?
Well, we certainly hope so. I think when in all the time that I've been coaching in this league, and it started with George Kingston and when Scotty Bowman was involved with George as well in trying to organize the coaches or advocate on the coaches' behalf. And they did a terrific job in the early stages. But I think when Mike Hirschfeld took over, I think Mike brought it to another level. It is just as far as organizing the coaches and trying to identify maybe where the needs are and how the coaches could work together with the NHL to try to improve the opportunity and the working relationship between the league and the coaches association. And I think Mike's done a great job as far as organizing all of us, because coaches want to be coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really don't want to pay a whole lot of attention to pension plans and things of that nature. But those things in reality are very important. They're important to people's lives and their families and security. And so I think Mike has done a really good job at just organizing the group and working with the league through some of the minutiae to get to the point where we are right now. And it's really encouraging.
You know, when you were at BU, you shared the ice with some pretty special hockey players. We think of John Cullen and Tony Amonte. I mean, this was a star-studded group. And you also had one of the more influential coaches that the game has ever seen. How often do you think of Jack Parker?
Oh, I think of him a lot. I think Jack had such a huge impression on me, not only as a player, but as a coach today. You know, I still talk to Jack a few times a year, and there have been situations over the last couple of years where I've called him just to seek his advice. Mm. And there hasn't been too much that Jack hasn't gone through as a coach that we couldn't learn from him. And he's always so gracious in taking my call. And I know some of his other players that have gone on to coaching have done the same thing. But I think of him a lot. You know, he was a terrific coach. You know, he wasn't warm and fuzzy by any stretch. Mm-hmm. He wasn't easy to play for. He was real demanding. But one of the things that I try to utilize in my coaching philosophies or my coaching styles is, you know, as hard as Coach Parker was on us as players, I always walked away from the experience knowing that, number one, he cared about me as a player and he had my best interest in mind in trying to make me the best player I could be or the best teammate I could be. And he was simply trying to help the Terriers be the best team they could be. And I always felt that way, as hard as sometimes he wasn't always my favorite guy with some of the conversations that he had with me, but that's coaching, right? Sometimes you're going to tell players, you need to tell players things that they don't want to hear, and it's in their best interest. And Jack never shied away from that stuff. But as a player, you always felt like, you know, he was the sincerity that he brought. And I just always knew that he cared about me. And I've tried to bring that to the way I coach with the guys that I interact with on a daily basis here.
We'll close with this one then. Do you have a favorite Jack Parker saying?
Yeah, my favorite, and I've used this with some of our players, is, you know, when if something didn't go the right way on the ice, or, you know, you didn't do your job in a certain circumstance or situation, he would drag you down the hallway in Walter Brown Arena, and he would always say, he would always say to you, "Let me tell you this, not so that you can understand, but so that you can't possibly misunderstand." I love that line.
Still use it?
I use it once in a while. Once in a while. There were some expletives in there as well that you guys can use your imagination, but that was one of my favorites.
That's fantastic. Mike, this has been a lot of fun. Continued success here. Your Penguins are a force once again, to no one's surprise. Thanks so much for this.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mike.
It's probably obvious as to why, but I always find, and Mike Sullivan's a really good example of it, coaches to be more intense, even in casual situations during the year, whether it was this podcast or when we had him on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. That is a very focused, head coach during the season?
Well, I think what it is, and I really do believe this, is when you have great players and he's got two Hall of Famers there, then they will not follow you unless they're convinced that you know more than they do.
And are all in.
And I think when you look at the way he carries himself, he convinces them that I know and I will handle it.
You and I have talked to a lot of coaches. You've been around them plenty. And I'm sure you've been around coaches where when the camera's off, they lighten up a little bit. From the minute Mike Sullivan was here at the building, it seemed like he was a coach. In control, we're doing this here. Like, he wanted to know everything about what was going on. He didn't ask what the questions were or anything like that that we were going to ask. But I got the impression that this guy, while he was here, is a coach 24/7. Accurate?
I would say that's probably true.
Had a good time talking to him.
Yeah,
as well.
He was great. Excellent.
And that is our conversation with Mike Sullivan. Also want to let you know, available at sportsnet.ca and our YouTube channel, Elliott's Sit Down with Sidney Crosby on the 10-year anniversary of the Golden Goal. Also, we sat down with Sidney Crosby on the Hockey Central radio show. Podcast of that is available at sportsnet.ca as well. Also at Apple Podcasts. Taking us out this week, Montreal-based band Land of Talk. They're getting set to release a new album, Indistinct Conversation. From that record, here's Weight of That Weekend by Land of Talk on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Always come at me from a different angle. Make me think I don't understand how I'm feeling to the feeling that I get out of hand. Visible.
Yeah.